You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. I don't do it often. But I told Chris Woodbridge, 1 o'clock on Wednesday? He said, yeah, that works. Awesome, let's do it. Book it. Problem is, 1 o'clock on the East Coast is 10 o'clock here, which means the program's not on anymore. Unbelievable. Man, I did the math in my head. Yeah, that'll work perfect. The good part is if you've been listening, Wes Fox, Colonel type, United States Marine Corps, had a chance to listen to him. I've got a couple more segments that I was going to save for later on in the week, but no need to. We'll listen to him now, and this is an interview that he did with a guy named Bachelor. He does a show on Westwood One. And so, again, more of Colonel Wesley Fox, United States Marine Corps, on a week that we remember Marine Corps legend. Ominous music. That's how you know the guy's a big player.
I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show. It's a pleasure to welcome Colonel Wesley L. Fox, United States Marine Corps retired, who's the author of a new book. He's written several books about his experiences in the Marine Corps, but the new book is for leaders. It's entitled Six Essential Elements of Leadership, Marine Corps Wisdom of a Medal of Honor Recipient. Colonel Wes, a very good evening to you. Your Medal of Honor from Vietnam, February of 1969, but that didn't begin your Marine experience. You joined the Marine Corps in 1950, and you were immediately sent to, within a few months' time, to the Korean War, January of 1951. Those were tough days for the Marine Corps. You arrived in a situation where the morale had been pummeled by various battles, the Pusan perimeter, and then the Incheon landing, and then the retreat from the Chosin Reservoir. And you were joining a Marine Corps that was being filled up very quickly because the war had caught the Marines down to about 68,000, I read from your book, and they were filling the ranks, the empty ranks, very quickly. Your first leader was a corporal named Davis. What about him taught you leadership right away in combat? And very good evening to you.
Well, thank you, and it's sure my pleasure to share some thoughts with you this evening. Corporal, the first name was Marin Davis, but I never knew that because to me his first name was always Corporal Davis. But the biggest thing is the way he handled us, and it's the little things that he sent the message to us that he cared, and it gets right down to a simple little thing like sea rations issue. There were some of those sea rations that you couldn't eat, like corned beef hash as an example. And the issue would kind of come on us when we'd be in the assault, and rather than load us down with a day's rations, in other words, three meals and something like a shoebox, we'd be given one meal and then be resupplied once we took the objective. But my point is that what that amounted to is that three of us had to split what was in that box. I'm not taking it. Daggone corned beef hash. I had that yesterday. I want something I can eat. Well, that was never a problem with Davis. He issued all the sea rations to his three fire team leaders with the guidance, give him the meal that was left. And that sent a strong signal. I mean, that guy, he couldn't have liked corned beef hash any more than I did. But he didn't fuss with it. He took what was left and I hope he liked it, because that's all he got.
Corporal Davis, he was the squad leader, 3rd Squad, 3rd Platoon, Item Company, Company I, 3rd Battalion, 5th Marine Regiment, 1st Marine Division in the Korean War. And Corporal Davis had been through all of those battles, the Pusan, Incheon, and Chosin. Is that correct?
That's correct. And he wasn't, my goal in joining the Marine was to be a Marine rifleman. I was really surprised later in my association in that squad to learn that that was not his specialty. He was a refrigeration repairman, and he had gone into Pusan in his MOS. But with the casualties taken in the Pusan perimeter fighting when the Marines got involved down there, he was one of those in the rear echelon that was moved forward as a rifleman as a replacement for the casualties taken. And, of course, Davis was in that 3rd Squad. Then from then, the fight into Seoul and the Incheon landing, the fight out of the Chosin. And when I joined the squad there in January, he was the only Marine that had been in that squad through all of that. There were two other young Marines in the squad that had gone in at Pusan, but they'd been wounded and had spent some time back in Japan in a hospital. Davis had no break in all of that time, and still this guy had moved up into that leadership position and handled it so well in spite of the world that he lived in, and just motivated the heck out of me.
You write about how you didn't have any way to cook your sea rations. You couldn't start a fire after being in assault all day because the enemy would find you, and you didn't have the hot tabs that were issued later. So you had to eat them cold, and still Davis would take the leftovers from the sea rations. And it was that taught you that a leader is best when he cares for his men or his people, and he makes it clear he cares for them. But I don't take it from Davis that it was a matter of pride with him. He didn't brag about how he was eating the leftovers. That was just what he wanted everybody to do.
No, we never heard a word out of Corporal Davis regarding me. It was always you, my team, my members. And when it comes to, we didn't, of course, cook the sea rations. We would like to warm them up so you could eat them. But like you say, during the day we were in the move, on the move, couldn't stop the bill of fire. We didn't, the heat tab didn't come into them on the Marine side anyway until that summer, June of 1951. So the only way we could thaw out our sea rations that were frozen in January and February was to build a wood fire. Well, and like you say, once we took the objective, it's dark, you don't build a wood fire then and give away your position. So we'd chisel a couple bites of that frozen stuff out of a can, and that's what it was the way it ended up. Well, the next time that we went back in reserve, which is in the rear, and you got some rest time, and well, Davis showed up with a little Coleman burner. And true to his words, he didn't push it on me and my Browning automatic rifle load. He carried it. But my whole point in all of this was that even though he carried it, he was the last one to use it. And many mornings we were moving in the assault before he had gotten the burner back to where he could even make himself a cup of coffee, which he really loved. But that was all in that signal to me that I'm first in his life, and me and the other members of his squad are ahead of everything that Corporal Davis would cherish or might want, but we get it first.
17 years later, the same Marine, now a lieutenant in the United States Marine Corps, joins the 1st Battalion of the 9th Marine Regiment, 3rd Marine Division in Vietnam, and your commander on 1-9 is Lieutenant Colonel George Smith. You're a lieutenant. You want to be commanding a rifle company, which means captain, and you're interviewed by him. What did you learn from him that November?
Well, I really learned the importance of eyeball contact and the sincerity of the guy that you are the unit that you're joining. I mean, he was an individual, well, like Corporal Davis, he was obviously concerned not only about me and me getting maybe a job I wanted, but he was also concerned about his Marines. He wanted to make sure, and I'm sure he made that positive knowledge on every assignment that he made, that this Marine, this individual, is capable of doing what I want him to do and what his Marines expect him to do. So he was really just making sure that he was doing the correct thing by giving me command of a rifle company.
So he was taking care of his men by making sure you were the right man to command them.
Right, and again, that all fits under that word care. In my opinion, the number one essential element of leadership.
That is, this is Lieutenant Colonel Wesley Fox, United States Marine Corps, retired. This is his book, Six Essential Elements of Leadership. But the first one, care, we've spent time with, because that establishes the bond between the leader and the followers, the enlisted men or the non-commissioned officers or the junior officers, who all of whom can later become the leader of a battalion or a company or general officers. But care begins at the beginning. When we come back, we'll go to the five other traits, and then we'll fight the Korean and Vietnam War again through the eyes of a veteran of 43 years active duty in the Marine Corps, Colonel Wesley L. Fox. I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show.
43 years. It's amazing. Again, Colonel Wesley Fox. Again, talking about the interview's about his book, but later they'll get to his experiences in both Korea and Vietnam.
This is the John Batchelor Show. It's a pleasure to speak to Colonel Wesley Fox, United States Marine Corps retired, because we're telling stories from his vast career in the Marine Corps, fighting through the Cold War, the Korean War, the Vietnam War, and being stationed in the Pacific, and rotating back into the U.S. and going through all elements of training the Marines. If you consider the Marines have been in the front line of every combat unit that the U.S. has put in the field since the Second World War, and they certainly were integral to the success in the Pacific during the Second, but this is 50-93. Colonel, I want to go, we've talked about care, but now I want to go through the other recommendations you make quickly, and then I want to go to talk about the Vietnam and Korean War. Personality. You mentioned that a leader must have charisma, but that isn't enough. He must have integrity, but most of all, courage. What does that mean, courage? More even than integrity. How do you take that, Wes?
Well, I place courage ahead of integrity because without it, we tend to fall short. We're faced with something that would be embarrassing or something that we might not want to do. If we don't have the courage to hang on to it, we'll fall short in that sense of, or in that important element of integrity. And again, I don't want to take anything away from integrity because that's very important. But without courage, we tend to fall short.
You say hang in there. You admired the officers and your enlisted men who even though they weren't first rate at what they were doing, they kept at it. Is that correct?
That's correct, and you know it's not just in uniform; it's in our everyday lives. Sometimes we take the easy way out rather than face the hard way, or we give the wrong answer because we don't want to we don't have the courage to go ahead and do what we should say, what we should confront. And really, I guess the big thing about care, in my opinion, makes a difference between a leader and a manager. A manager is concerned about the bottom line,
right.
And a leader is ought to be, needs to be, concerned about his followers.
And because one way of seeing that you're effective is if your followers want to imitate what you have. I love the little anecdote about an enlisted man asking you if the Marine Corps provides gold for teeth. Wes has a bridge with gold in it, and they could see when he smiled that he had gold, and they wanted gold just like you. Is that right, Colonel?
Yeah, you've read my book. No kidding. That's the way they are, yeah.
Now, knowledge. You're very, very blunt in saying that the Marine Corps lacked knowledge in the Korean War, and that was a failure of national leadership. The president of the country at that point, Mr. Truman, wasn't even sure he wanted a Marine Corps, and it was down to 68,000. But you give other examples of you not having enough information. You weren't given adequate training on your rifle. You weren't given adequate training for night combat. And there were a lot of things that were not provided for the Marine Corps in the Korean War. Was that because you were in transition, that the officer corps was that the middle officer corps and the non-commissions were missing?
Well, the big reason was, like you say, Truman wanting to do away with the Marine Corps, and he was in the process of doing that from just under 600,000 5 years earlier at the end of the war to the 68,000 that you mentioned. What that amounted to really is, and you kind of touched on it earlier, is I went to the Korean War with only boot camp. I had no infantry training, and the whole reason was that MacArthur had to have somebody, a unit that would fight, had to ask for the Marines, and the Commandant gave him a division, and he didn't have a division to send. So they recruited a bunch of us and got us over there as quickly as they could with only boot camp training. But again, that made us Marines. But along that same line, a number of reserve Marines that had never even been through boot camp
right.
found themselves in the Korean War. And as a matter of fact, one of them received a Medal of Honor and still alive today that had never even gone through Marine boot camp but ended up in that war. And the ship I went over on, the USS Repose, we pulled into Yokohama, and I was surprised to hear that over the loudspeaker, all 17-year-olds and reservists that have never been through boot camp, to bring your sea bag and come up, you're getting off. So we dumped off all those young guys and those that hadn't been trained in January by the time that I'm on my way over.
So the Marine Corps sent into combat, eventually, people who were not carefully prepared, and that's an example of leadership has to prepare your people. I want to mention motivation now. Preparing them also means that you've got to motivate them while you're in combat. There was an example you gave of your young squad leaders being very excited when you gave them an opportunity to ambush the enemy. This is Hill 37 near Cam Lo Village in I Corps, Vietnam. And they took from you the ability to motivate themselves. How did you do that, Wes?
Well, it was really my thoughts on we're not getting very much results in our action, our activity in the area that I was assigned. And the reason was because Marines had been doing it then for about 5 years, doing the same thing over the same trails, sending out the same ambushes, same positions for all that period of time, and the enemy, the North Vietnamese and the Viet Cong knew what to expect of them. So my thoughts were, how can I turn it around? And so I did that by placing my squads under that young squad leader, in many cases just a lance corporal, 19, 20-year-old young Marines, placing them out for 2 and 3 days on their own to do what they think and what they encountered and as they lived, more or less lived, within their assigned area. And it really paid off, as I spell out in the book. And it confused the enemy because we hadn't been doing that. There's no way they could know what to expect, what trails to watch, and that sort of thing.
So you gave them an opportunity to motivate themselves. Also commitment. Now, this was a difficult one because I learned from you, Wes, that in Vietnam, the enlisted men in the Marine Corps had a 12-month tour and officers a 6-month tour. And it reads to me that you don't think that was correct. You think the Marine Corps made a mistake there.
Oh, it did, and it's not a tour completely. We all went to Vietnam for initially it was a 13-month tour, and then it later dropped down 1 month to 12 months. But the point was that Marine officers in rifle companies were only in that rifle company for 6 months, and then they were given a rear echelon job, whereas the enlisted Marine in the rifle company was there for the whole time or until he was wounded or killed. And where that really hurt me and really smacked up the realities of how wrong it was is, like I mentioned in the book, when a young Marine comes to me after he's at his 11th month and he wants a job in the rear because he's afraid, he's worried about not making it home. He's been through a whole lot, maybe wounded already one time, and he's back, and he doesn't feel like he's going to make it, and he wants a job in the rear. And I tell him, no, the jobs are all filled. There's no place I can put you in the rear echelon. And, of course, there was always that encounter.
Six essential elements of leadership, Marine Corps a wisdom of a Medal of Honor recipient. Colonel Wesley L. Fox, United States Marine Corps, retired. When we come back, communication, and one day in the Operation Dewey Canyon. I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show.
You'll hear part two in a minute. Don't go away. A day that we remember, Marine Corps legend Wesley Fox. Colonel, born in 1931, passed away last week, and a Marine Corps legend. And you'll hear more about him this week from Tom Droughty, going to join us, Brigadier General. Colonel Fox was his XO at one point, so we'll hear from Tom Droughty. And hopefully, and there will be others. So anyway, everything else can wait. He's a great Marine and a bit of a legend in the Marine Corps. Not a bit of a legend, a straight-up legend in the Marine Corps. And one of those guys, when he walked in the room, right, the room got quiet. Not out of fear, but out of respect. Colonel Wes, you know, that's Wesley Fox. I've heard that more than once in my life.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt. Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it. Are you looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military, for a first responder, for a hunter, for an outdoorsman, or somebody that just likes cool military stuff, I've got the perfect gift for you. The Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out. BattleMug.com.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner, proven and dependable.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the SOF community should be aware of.
The Global South Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines. You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. We continue on a day that we're listening to some interviews that were done with Colonel Wesley Fox. And what you're listening to is a show that runs on Westwood One Radio Network. A guy's name is Bachelor. And he, Colonel Fox wrote a book, and he wrote a number of them, but the book he wrote is called was a book on leadership and six essential elements of leadership. And so Bachelor's interviewing about that, and then they'll talk about the Korean War and the Vietnam War. So the Associated Press just reported that Garrison Keillor says that he's been fired by Minnesota Public Radio over allegations of inappropriate behavior. More to follow. Well, as I said, don't be surprised at what comes next. Garrison Keillor, Lake Wobegon, right? And all of that? He is now in the news. So, back to something that you can count on. A Marine, Wes Fox.
I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show. I'm speaking with Colonel Wesley L. Fox, United States Marine Corps retired, and his book, Six Essential Elements of Leadership, it tells anecdotes of what the colonel learned from 43 years active duty in the Marine Corps, several wars through the Cold War, from 1950 to 1993. There's one day that illustrates very, very carefully why communication is necessary, both in terms of what your orders are and how you must communicate to your unit. Wes, this looked like a hoot when I read it to you. You get in a helicopter with your company. I think this is Alpha Company. You're commanding Alpha Company for 1-9. And you climb into CH-46s and you go whomping out into the terrain. But the helicopter pilots have not been told that the LZ's been changed. And they dump you in the wrong place. Is that correct?
Well, they dumped us in the original plan place. But not where I'd been told that we were going to, that it had been changed to move us into. In other words, I was I expected we landed on the western side of this ridge line, and instead they placed us down on the eastern side of it.
And you didn't speak to them during the flight, even though you worried that you didn't recognize the terrain below you.
I didn't speak to them because I thought they had the same word that I had, that our landing zone had been changed.
So that lack of communication led to your whole unit. I really expected this to be the end, except for I know you wrote the book and you survived this. You were put down in a place where you had no recognition. You couldn't get any radio communication. You were completely cut off, and you started walking. And you were walking in the wrong direction, and it wasn't until late in the day that you got an ability to communicate with a fire base, and they fired a flare, and you realized you had to reverse and do your whole route back, and you had to tell the company that you'd made that mistake. Now, was that a good thing that you were blunt with the company, that it was your fault, you took it upon yourself, and you didn't blame the helicopter pilots?
Well, yes, and of course I didn't, the helicopter pilots out of it at that point, it's just me and them, so
right.
It's just shouldering the responsibility, and of course my young Marines, I hadn't even been in command, 2 weeks at that point, so it didn't impress them very much with this thing that's supposedly leading them, but I was able to overcome that and move forward, fortunately, and we did, my Marines did a great job.
But that is a good example of communication. And the failure of communication there led to poor leadership. Is that correct, Colonel?
That's right.
All right, let's go to Operation Dewey Canyon, because there are a number of elements in this story. It takes place over 2 months, January to March of 1969, and I learned that it was the last major military operation for the Marine Corps in the Vietnam War. This was 56 days of nonstop combat, and you were the 1-9, commanded by Colonel Smith. There were two other battalions working alongside of you, either east and west, and you were right along the Laotian border. In fact, one of the battalions crossed into Laos. Your job, as I see it on the map, Colonel, you were there, is you were assigned along a river and a ridge line in the center of the combat, as the battalions to the east and west went south of you. What was your mission in those early days, January, February, Colonel?
To find the enemy and destroy him. The U.S. forces had never been into that part of the Ashall, and the war had wound down throughout Vietnam to where we really thought it was about over. My commanders realized that the Ashall Valley is the only place we were liable to find them. And on the plus side of that for us was the fact of this was a rainy season in January, February, and March, and the enemy surely wouldn't expect us to do something that we had to be supported with by helicopters, and the weather wouldn't give us helicopter support flying abilities. So we really surprised them, I think, in the fact that we did it during that poor flying weather. And, of course, we did find them, and we kicked butt and did a great job.
The combat that you describe intensely here is an example of how to lead, and at the same time the mistakes that can happen when you're leading companies. It's very confusing, especially the firefight, but as I understand it from your book, you're Alpha Company, and Bravo Company and Delta Company are on your flanks. Is that correct? And Charlie was also with you, but I don't know where they were positioned.
Yeah, Charlie and my company were attacking down one ridge line, and Bravo and Delta were on the ridge line to our right. And so Charlie and my company would take turns in leading the assault down that ridge line. But on my big fight, it was a mission down off of the ridge line on the flank where the enemy had been located the day before. And I was sent down to find out if they were still there, and if so, do something about it.
And you were commanding 80, you had 80 men with you at this point, and you took them into combat in a situation where you didn't have really good information about how many you were facing or whether they were dug in or not, is how I read your book.
Correct. We didn't know, really didn't even know, we didn't have maps that you could place the exact coordinates of anything. Like the night before, we had thought we brought in air and artillery on the suspected position. Right. I was to find out the next day. It didn't even get close to them. They weren't even threatened by it. And then, of course, the next day I couldn't use supporting arms, air or artillery, because of the rain and the low clouds right down in the trees with us. And so when I finally found them, then it's a really a rifleman's fight. We didn't have any kind of support other than get it done ourselves.
It looks like you took on a battalion. Your Alpha Company went up against a dug-in battalion. They lost so many casualties, they must have outnumbered you 3-1.
Well, there were 105 of them dead in the position when it was over. And like I say, I had less than 80 Marines because
right.
I'd committed a squad to another mission on the way down that ridge. And so they for sure came out on the negative end, and they were the defenders in defending positions, generally on the ground and that sort of thing. And we, the assaulting force, needs to be an advantage of 3-1 to overcome an enemy in that situation.
Well, they completely overwhelmed you. Let's go through what happened around you. Bravo Company was commanded by Meerdink. He's a casualty. What did he do wrong, or did he do anything wrong when you lost him?
Well, Meerdink, Bravo, they were on the ridge line to our right, and I never saw George Meerdink that day, or once we started on the operation, I never saw him because he's over on the other ridge line. He moved over, and when we hit Laos, both he and Delta Company moved left and come to the hill where I had been the day before. I got the mission to move down into that valley. So George Meerdink was up on the I forget what the name of the knoll was anymore, but he was up there having moved over to our ridge line.
So he was taking the position you had vacated in order to move down.
Right, but not he was not involved in my fight. And where George messed up was he started his unit started getting mortar rounds, and he, for whatever reason, left the bunker that he was in to get outside with his artilleryman to shoot an azimuth on the sounds of the mortar tubes popping so he could put artillery on them. Unfortunately for the Corps, for him, his family, and our country, one of those mortar rounds landed right amongst him, killed both of them instantly.
And when a company loses its commander like that, does that mean that it is no longer effective? How do they fill that when you're in combat? You can't break action.
Oh, no, you don't break action. The next guy in seniority takes over. The executive officer takes over. There was one company that I read about in the Vietnam War that a Marine corporal who was the last, was the senior guy in charge as a company commander. I mean, it gets that bad sometimes, but the Marines don't quit. They keep fighting, and the senior man is the one responsible, and it doesn't matter about rank.
Colonel Smith knows that he's lost Meerdink. What does he do when he loses a commander of one of his line companies?
Oh, the executive officer takes over.
I see.
And while you're out there on the operation, and then once you get back in the rear, you'd get some replacements, get a captain maybe to take over the company, or like in my case, a lieutenant that you felt is ready for the job.
Now, you were on the radio that day with Colonel Smith, and then you were taking fire. And you lost communication with him. He thought he'd lost you for a while because you're in a firefight, overwhelmed by the number of enemy you're facing, and you're losing men very quickly. The story you tell is that you go from Marine to Marine, and they're either dead or wounded or not firing. And you think you're down to about 40 effective Marines. And then you tell the story of Lieutenant Crisman. Who is he?
Bill Crisman was my 3rd platoon commander. He did a great job in that fight, and of course was killed. But I tried to write him up for the Medal of Honor, but I couldn't get any eyewitnesses for his action because the Marines that were with him were killed or wounded and medevaced out the next day for threat of loss of life or limb. So really had no eyewitnesses to support. There is a requirement of two eyewitnesses to support the write-up for a Medal of Honor.
What was his platoon, the first platoon?
He was a second lieutenant.
He was second lieutenant, but what was his platoon? Was it first platoon or second?
Oh, no, he had the third platoon.
Third platoon. And he was out front. Is that where they got hit in the ambush?
Well, no. The day before, Bill was down there and tangled into this unit. But on this day, both my third platoon and first platoon were online. Once I located the enemy, I moved forward with a two-platoon assault, my first and third.
And you kept a reserve.
Assault, and the second platoon was behind me in reserve.
Right. And when you got into the depth of the fight, and I'm speaking to Wes Fox about a firefight that was the last big Marine action of the Vietnam War was Operation Dewey Canyon. When you got into the fight, you had two platoons overwhelmed. You had a decision either to break off or commit your reserve. I know what you did, but how does a leader make that decision, Wes? What told you to commit the reserve?
Well, as I moved along my front, and you just covered it light, earlier with the fact that, and this is dense jungle. You can never see more than a Marine on your right and your left. And as I moved along my front, every Marine was down, and if he wasn't firing his rifle, he appeared no different to me from a casualty. And that caused me to think I was hurt worse at that point than it turned out I really was. So I realized, and my assault had stalled. Again, like I say, my Marines were down. As I moved along trying to find out what was going on, and I couldn't talk to either of my platoon commanders. As it turned out, both of them had already been wounded at this point. So I had to find out on my own, and I really came up with, I've got two options. One, break contact and get out of here, or two, commit my reserve platoon and hopefully make a difference. Well, what I wanted to do was break contact. Sorry, Charlie, we'll leave you alone. But I realized I can't leave unless I know I've got every one of my Marines dead and wounded. I'm not leaving without them. And for me to recover my Marines up from under in this jungle and under this heavy firefight, I'm going to lose more Marines. And then I realized, well, carrying my casualties, I won't have enough Marines to hold off the enemy. So I really didn't have an option. I decided to commit my reserve platoon, and we'll either walk out of this valley or we'll all stay in it forever.
Six essential elements of leadership, Marine Corps wisdom of Medal of Honor recipient, Colonel Wesley L. Fox, United States Marine Corps retired. That was 22 February 1969, for which Colonel Fox, then Captain Fox, received the Medal of Honor awarded by Richard Nixon in 1971. When we come back, there are other parts of Marine leadership that are critical to understand, and the Colonel, once he retired from the Marine Corps, had the privilege of being the Deputy Commandant of a Cadet Corps. And what he learned from that is also instructive for the 21st century, because one of his major write-ups in the book was for a young woman who led the Corps. I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show. John Batchelor.
You know, it's pretty interesting when you hear Colonel Fox talking about the actions that led to his Medal of Honor. You know, he's trying to break contact, and then as he's going through looking at what what's still effective, how many guys it's going to take to move different people. You know, he's not going to have enough ass to cover the movement, and they're all going to get killed. And so then the only other option is we got to go that way. We got to kill them. That's the only way we live. And that's the story of his Medal of Honor. Amazing.
This is the John Batchelor Show. I'm speaking to Colonel Wesley Fox in the Marine Corps from 1950 to 1993. And then I learned, I didn't know this, Wes, that you need the permission of the President of the United States to continue in the Marine Corps active after your 62nd birthday. So You didn't ask or get the permission. You retired, but not much, because you became deputy commandant of a cadet corps. And in that, you were instructive to the leadership of the corps and then those who were not doing well in the corps. There is a letter in your book that you wrote, a recommendation for a young woman who was one of the leaders of the corps. Her name is Gina. What did she learn? What does this letter say about leaders? Because this is not what you would expect a military leader to be in 1950. This is a young woman who is in the world today.
Yes, and of course, in the 1990s, they were talking about, Gina was, she just had a lot of Corporal Davis's characteristics. She was always involved with her cadets. She was always up front, sweating with them, doing whatever they were doing, and it just impressed me with, that she was the kind of leader that really cares, gets involved with her troops, and she lived it day in and day out.
So the gender switch didn't matter, or the strength, or the fact that she didn't look like a combat Marine Sergeant Stryker sans Iwo Jima. She was a young woman who fulfilled all of the elements that you describe in your book, especially care.
That's correct. And, of course, she wasn't a Marine option. She was an Air Force cadet at the time and went on and got her commission in the Air Force. But, again, leadership fits in all of those areas, and those that have the personality and the commitment and the knowledge get on with it, and it all boils down to taking care of your followers, motivating your followers to think in the terms of us as a team. It's not me and them. It's a team effort, and we're in it together. And that's pretty much the way she ran her battalion of the Corps of Cadets.
One of the things I learned from you, Wes, is that you have to, as a leader, always concern yourself with the us and them, because any military organization can quickly turn into the officers and everybody else.
That's a factor, and that's one of the problems that the Army had in the Korean War, them and us. Like, I was really surprised when we'd be relieved by an Army unit, my rifle company there on those ridgelines. And the platoon leader, the lieutenant, wondered, where's the officer's tent? He expected a tent down on the reverse side of the hill to be with the officers. And, of course, that's not the Marine way of doing it. Our lieutenants were always right out there with us on the ridge with his rifle squads where he could fight them. And I think it really makes a big difference. Them and us. Don't do that. It's us.
Lieutenant Colonel Smith, your commander in Vietnam, he has two sons who are Marines today, and they're following their father. Where are they, Wes?
Okay, one just got selected for Brigadier General, and he's a commanding general out at the Marine Corps Base 29 Palms, California. And the other one is a corporal, is a colonel, just returned from Afghanistan, and he's down at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. And he's... I believe he's the assistant division commander.
So I would say that Colonel Smith was a motivating, careful, communicating, and inspiring leader to his own children, and that's a measure of a good leader in the Marine Corps.
Oh, he sure did. He's really done a great job all the way down, not only Marines, but for sure his family and of course, he managed to get his family time in spite of the requirements laid on him by the Marine Corps. But he's really got some young children, some followers that are doing a great job.
Colonel Wesley L. Fox, United States Marine Corps retired. The book is Six Essential Elements of Leadership, Marine Corps Wisdom of a Medal of Honor Recipient. I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show.
That's awesome. No, you know, you cross paths like with men like that in the Marine Corps when you're young. You know, and they're in the pantheon of heroes, and we all do it. I mean, I've heard guys who would go on to be general officers, General Lynch, General Drowdy, who will join us tomorrow, and both talk about, you know, crossing paths with when they were young officers, with guys like General Barrow, Colonel Barrow at the time, that General Lynch tells his story. And, you know, you hear Harvey Barnum talking about being a first lieutenant, aide to General Walt, and meeting Barrow and Davis and getting to, you know, be amongst them, and what incredible respect that everybody had for them. Because, you know, it starts with being a good guy. It starts with being a good human being, a good man, a good woman, and it goes from there. And they are good in every sense of the way. And their courage in combat is just an extension of who they are. And if when you heard, you know, Colonel Fox talk, you never once heard him talk about himself. You know, just didn't view the world like that. He was a leader, and he was responsible for other people. Even his little anecdote about going into bunkers before his platoon sergeant and his squad leader in Korea. He didn't like the idea that a squad leader was going in there with a pistol. He wanted to go in there with a bar. And he thought that was his job. So you hear it reflected all throughout. So I would encourage you, by all means, let your friends know about that little treasure trove. Both interviews are awesome. And they're full of little things that I think, as a leader, you know, you ought to write down. You ought to write down. And the way we've done it, which is timeless. And again, we talk about institutional discipline and organizational leadership here. And the thing that you can't do is you can't. The Marine Corps has a tried and true method for doing these things. Now, I understand maybe reshuffling the deck. I don't understand lowering the bar. I don't understand not inspecting. I don't understand not making them clean up. I don't understand forcing those behaviors that force people to do certain things when you're in garrison. And those things, ultimately, are the things that's how you go to combat. Do you inspect? You know, will you correct? All of that. So, again, just a cool morning here on All Marine Radio when you get to find little pieces of treasure like that. And most importantly, we get it. We get Colonel Fox. From our tribe, those of us who I sat in the audience, I think in Quantico, I was out at the basic school when he was at Officer Candidate School for some period of time. And, it's a pretty busy place, and I don't recall him, you know, trotting around and doing PMEs. I know that, you know, when asked, he certainly would do them. And so, I know I was at one event where he spoke, and he came across very much as, you know, he comes across in these things, and that is, as a normal down to earth, human being. And then talking about what he did, why he did it, how he did it. So, from our tribe, as a group, you know, you get to meet guys like this, and it is literally the experience of a lifetime, to get to be in a room for whatever short period of time that you're allowed to be in that room with a man like that. And man is the right term. I mean, you know, tested under very trying times, not once, but multiple times, and always delivered, always delivered. So, again, saddened at his passing, but celebrating a great life lived, not only as a Marine, but as a husband and father. So, Colonel Wesley Fox, born in 1931, passed away 2017. And a native of the Commonwealth of Virginia, and a loyal son of Virginia, and a proud son of Virginia. So wanted to be a farmer. So again, we're proud to call him part of our tribe and humbled that that he's in the same tribe that we are. Yeah. So this program repeats itself momentarily, so don't touch that dial. Thanks for listening today. Tomorrow we'll have guys we'll have Tom Droughty on, who served with Colonel Fox, and we'll continue our discussion about his life. We'll also talk to Chris Woodbridge, so we'll get an update on the Marine Corps Gazette. We'll get that tomorrow. And it is breaking news. Garrison Keillor, who is now 75 years old, public radio personality forever, since he started doing Lake Wobegon in 1974. He has announced that he's been fired by Minnesota Public Radio over allegations of improper behavior. So you have the head anchor of the morning show at CBS and at NBC. You have Bill O'Reilly, and now you have, so that's Fox, NBC, CBS. Only ABC remains untouched. And then you have a notable departure at PBS, probably their biggest name in broadcasting, Garrison Keillor. So interesting stuff. Surprised? Not so much. And but you know, it is. It's good. And then there's reports out that the Congressional Black Caucus is putting pressure on Representative John Conyers from Michigan to go ahead and resign. With all of that said, have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow. This program repeats itself right now.